Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host and sports writer for the LSJ, joined by Free Beat writer Chris Solari and LSJ sports columnist Graham Couch. Gentlemen, it is Wednesday morning as we record this right now. How are you guys feeling? You guys feeling alive? You guys feeling excited about college football returning, or at least the Big Ten anyway?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, look what happened with Wisconsin. What is it more exciting than that?
It took a week for someone to come down with COVID, or more specifically, three quarterbacks to come on the same team to come down with COVID. What a time.
Yeah, no, it's something else.
You know, and that's the interesting thing too. I mean, it's just like welcome to college football in 2020, Big Ten. I mean, this is the things that we saw back in the beginning of the season. That was going on elsewhere, and you know, it's what you signed up for when you agreed to bring it back, right?
Yep. Do we?
I do think that there is some, I don't know how you want to describe it, delicious irony that Nebraska is involved in all this.
Yeah, it would not pain me to be honest with you if Nebraska lost the game, And it's not really because I have anything usually against Nebraska. I think it's like the nicest fan base in the world. But we all know, what they were put. And to be honest, I also am happy Big Ten football is back. And they also, I think, helped propel it to come back. They kept their voices loud. So I don't want to say they weren't part of this, but they were also annoying little piss ants for a while.
Yeah, so with the Wisconsin, I want to mention this for a minute before we talk about Michigan State. That 21-day rule that the Big Ten put in terms of a testing positive, you've got to be out for 21 days. Do you think that's too many? Do you think the Big Ten needs to relook at that or not?
No. And the reason why is because they're doing it for the cardiac safety of the athletes. That's a big reason for it, so they can go through testing protocols to make sure that there's no heart issues and after effects of having, whether it be myocarditis or anything else that we don't and haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I don't know, but I guess the only reason I thought about that was maybe because we've seen all these other conferences. They don't really have that rule. And I mean, Saban tested positive, and then I know he had negative tests after that, whatever, but he was back in 2 days or whatever.
Well, but that's the coach. So there's a couple different things. Yeah. One is, first of all, are you using a weed whacker or a chainsaw right now, Chris?
Yeah. Oh, I think that's here. That's here, unfortunately. It is right outside my window. The apartment landscapers have decided to do their landscaping at this exact time right now.
You know, late October is a good time for landscaping.
beautiful weather for it.
I'm with Chris on the 21 days because what you're trying to do, you know, when you do less than that, it's to protect other people, right? I mean, the absurdity of Josh Turner, right, last night, coming out during the World Series without a mask next to Dave Roberts, his manager, who is a cancer survivor, right? Like that is what the problem with that is, not the athlete probably himself, whose season is over anyway, but it's the people around him and now all the families. And with a player, what they're trying to do here is not just protect other players, but they're trying to make sure there are no, as Chris says, no lasting issues about something we don't know a lot about and a thing that people react to differently. And it's also happening in a season that everybody gets a redo for. I mean, like, this is not – I mean, Antoine Simmons, you forget, is now a junior. Rocky Lombardi became a sophomore. I'm not saying these guys won't leave, but all these guys can come back if they want. And this is a totally it's sort of a freebie year in that sense. And the other thing is, we ought to be caring about the long term. Like, yeah, it stinks that Graham Mertz might miss the Michigan game or whatever. But, you know, if that's your concern, your value structure is screwed up.
Fair enough. I just thought it was interesting. I kind of thought Big Ten might go back and look at it, but who knows? Probably not. I think you guys have convinced me. That one way.
I think that's a major reason why they did. Went forward with having the season this fall in the first place.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on from that a little bit. We got a lot to talk about today. First thing we'll do is we'll talk about yesterday's press conference with Mel Tucker and his comments regarding the school down the road. The media also with Antoine Simmons and Rocky the Bard, and we'll talk about what those three talked about. Then we will talk a little bit about the Rutgers game that happened 5 days ago. But I think people are, at least fans anyway, are still not happy with a lot of things that transpired in that game, and we'll talk about what's sticking in our minds 4 days later. And believe it or not, it's Michigan week. So, you know, with the Wolverine game on Halloween afternoon, we'll talk about the Michigan game and the build-up to that, and then we'll make our predictions. All right, guys. Well, let's start with yesterday's press conference with Mel Tucker. Chris, I'll have you go first here. What was the thing that really kind of stood out from you, or that you really want to talk about that maybe took you back a little bit from stuff that Mel said?
Well, I think to me the biggest thing was that, I mean, he did address I think the overreaction obviously is there, but, you know, you hear people immediately start calling for a job. I don't know how much of that's hyperbole, how much of that is actual frustration. I mean, but the reality is, I mean, if this game happens against Minnesota, and you lose like this against Minnesota, you don't have the same backlash. You know, if this happens against even Indiana, maybe a few years ago, it might have had some of it, but because it was Rutgers, because of the opponent, because of the way everything transpired, right. Maybe 20 minutes of the game, you know, I think it was the first six drives that ended up in, you know, outside of the touchdown, and there were turnovers, there were turnover on downs. I mean, you know, that was, it was as bad as you could start a coaching career. And that's not hyperbole. And how much that was on Mel Tucker, how much that was on the circumstances, how much that was on the past regime, leaving the cupboard somewhat bare. I think there's a lot of things that go into it. I don't think it's just one. And some of it goes on the coaching staff for not having them ready, and not dialing it back. Maybe that's a hard thing. But anyways, I think that, you know, the one thing that stood out was Tucker seems staying the course with his message. I think that's important. I think that's important in terms of, he talked about as a leader, you have to turn a page quickly as a coach. You can't dwell, and you have to set the tone for everybody else. And, you know, I think that is the right message at the moment. The only problem is that, hey, Graham, you're turning the page right into a giant hairy woolly mammoth ready, staring you down, ready to stomp you.
Yes, one that looked very, very good against Minnesota on Saturday night.
So there are a couple things that stood out to me. One is sort of what Chris was talking about. It was his tone. He was not defensive. He did not sound, you know, he was not like, what do you want? This is going to take 5 years. He was not, you know, one of the problems D'Antonio had at the end is he went from being somebody who read the fan base so well to being very defensive in certain moments. And this was not that. This was measured. This was, I get it. I've been coaching 24 years. I've been fired a few places. Again, this is why you hire a head coach at 48 years old. And not 35 often, because they've been fired. They have some perspective. They've been part of rebuilds. They've been part of building it. They know what they have and what's in front of them. Here's an interesting dynamic too. I've started to think about last week's game went about as badly as it could go for a debut. Yes. But that is a very short term way of thinking about it, because if Rutgers had been just the miserable bunch of SOBs they usually are, then, and Michigan State had won by two touchdowns, but been the same exact team that they are, the expectations going into this week would be different. And people might think the Vegas line might be 12. And people would think maybe there was a shot at an upset. And I think what happened last week, as bad as it was, could help this week. Now, Michigan State has to not turn it over like that. They have to look prepared. They have to look physical. They can't wither no matter what the score is. But if this is a game, even if it's 38-17, where Michigan State, you know, shows that they have some athletes they can score with, and they don't get just run over completely. It looks like a competitive game on the field for a while. Like what happened last week will actually help that be okay. And I think the psyche coming out of a Michigan game is much more lasting than a psyche out of a Northwestern game. So in that sense, what happened last week may not be the worst thing in the world if this week looks okay.
Chris, you were the one, Mel kept referring to Michigan as the school down the road. And then after he did that, I'll say four or five times, you actually asked him about why he was calling the school that. what was kind of your reaction to his response? And I mean, do you think it's a, I mean, what do you think about him just referring to Michigan as that kid? Do you think it's something that will stick and something that gets his team motivated, or is this just a little ridiculous thing that maybe that you don't need to worry about?
It's kind of a weird thing. So in listening to back to it, you know, when he talked about the rivalry, he talked about Michigan, Michigan State. He talked about Auburn, Alabama. He talked about Georgia, Florida. He talked about the Steelers, Browns, you know, Bears and Packers, all these NFL rivalries, all these rivalries that he's been a part of as a coach. That 10,000 foot overview, he had no problem saying it. But when it came down to discussing the next opponent, he was talking about that school up the road or down the road, depending on which time you listen to him. So, that goes back to coaching. I think that goes back to who you've been around. And I mean, that's straight out of the Jim Tressel playbook. That's, you know, I mean, I think D'Antonio had moments early in his career, Graham, maybe you can fill in the blanks for me on this, but I feel like there were points early in his career where he would try and avoid it as much as possible. But then at the same point, you know, he also took a different approach and went head on and had no problem with it. And in some ways tried to minimize it publicly without that. And, you know, we'll focus it more on the football than the theatrics of it. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, was it Urban Meyer that had them get rid of all the M's in around campus at Ohio State during Michigan week? And, you know, it's certainly one of those things that comes with rivalries, but it's, you know, it is what it is. I'm not a big fan either way of it, Graham. How about you?
Yeah, I don't like it. It's not like it's a big sin or anything. I hate that stuff. I hate the school up north for Ohio State. I hate the remove the M. Like, you know, I get it, but it just, I like the way D'Antonio did that really well, where it was not hiding from mentioning it. It was taking Michigan directly on. I think that speaks to where Michigan State's fan base is more. Michigan State is not historically in a place where to pretend not to mention Michigan works. You know what I mean? Like, Michigan State is an insecure institution that rightfully thinks Michigan has treated them poorly over the years, and it matters. And D'Antonio hit that tone, and that's a tough tone to take. But that's the great thing D'Antonio did before, you know, he won all the games, before they won 3 Big Ten titles and went to a playoff and won a Rose Bowl and won 36 games in 3 years. He spoke the language that MSU fans needed to hear when they needed to hear it, and he flipped the script on that rivalry. Now, Michigan was in a different place at the time, but what he said after the Michael Hart chuckle and little brother moment, and then what he said the next year after they beat Michigan, and then in 2009 saying, you know, this rivalry has a way of defining you, and then continuing in 10. He always had, he knew when to have a little jab. He knew what to, and that's something you got to find your footing on. I don't have a problem with what Mel Tucker did. I'm not a fan of the pretend something doesn't exist crap.
It was defiance. I mean, that's what D'Antonio had. He had defiance of the past. And that's really, you know, it worked in his favor. You know, I wonder, again, we're in weird times, weird circumstances. I wonder if it would have been a normal off season if, you know, if Tucker had time to really, because I don't know. I mean, how much do you think this coaching staff had a chance to really even think about Michigan up until this week? Probably not much at all. Considering you were preparing in the summer to face Northwestern, then you were preparing to face Minnesota, and then all of a sudden you had to prepare to face Rutgers. You've already prepped for three opponents, and you only play one game.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other thing is, I was listening, I wrote a column that went up Monday evening on, you know, just sort of how this rivalry will, in both rhetoric and results, shape his relationship with MSU fans and how it did for D'Antonio. And one of the things, I went back and listened to his press conference from their win in overtime against Nebraska last year, and he was really good. It was very subtle, but it was very much, we knew they'd wear down. We knew we were the best conditioned team. You know, that sort of stuff that I think he wants to be a staple of his program. And you got to remember, when he took the Colorado job, he starts in December with a full off-season conditioning program, recruiting class, spring ball. He could feel that way. I don't think he feels that way right now. And so it's a harder thing to have. The things that are important to you about having bravado, like talking smack doesn't work when you don't have the pieces to back it up. And when nobody pokes you and you don't have the pieces, you shouldn't go at them. Like, I don't think he has yet, but I'm just saying, like, you know, Mark D'Antonio didn't say anything before Mike Hart's comments in 2007.
Well, that was the Appalachian State comment is what started the whole thing down the road. When in the post game with Will Tiemann, D'Antonio said, you know, Will Tiemann told him, you know, Mark, Appalachian State just beat Michigan, and he goes, well, let's have a moment of silence for him. That's what got it all started.
Well, that's true. That's true. And that was a snarky comment. But
but at the same point, that's the defiant tone that he took from the outset at his biggest rival, which, you know, that's a high risk, high reward move, right? Like, what happens if they don't come back and win in 2008 and all those years in between?
No,
you know,
question.
How much do we remember that? I mean, they went 7-1 in that stretch. Yeah, you got to back it up. And I think that's the interesting thing I think about Tucker. It's like, you know, anybody who's a realist in this situation understands the situation that Tucker has been put in from a football standpoint. I mean, it's preposterous. I mean, you saw, I think as that game against Rutgers went along, you saw things started to smooth out a little bit. But how for that, my goodness. I mean, that's why you you have spring practice. That's why you have all this fall camp. I mean, you know, football's a game of repetition, and if you don't have that repetition, what do you got?
In reading what the things Rocky Lombardi said yesterday, I thought his responses were pretty measured. You know, pretty good for someone who was coming off a little bit of a rocky debut. Nailed it. What did you guys think of the way Rocky?
Yeah, how long you been waiting for that? How long have you been holding that one?
Had it in the back pocket for a year now. What did you guys think of his
halftime? Yeah, that was you at halftime, didn't you?
Yes, you caught me. What did you guys think of his response to the way he played on Saturday?
I thought he actually played. I thought it was the right response. I think what Mel Tucker knows is what a lot of people should know about Rocky Lombardi right now. Number one, again, he's not an older quarterback. He's a sophomore now. People forget that. But he's also – and I don't know what his ceiling is. I don't know if he's the best guy to win a Big Ten championship with. I do think, though, that he is a guy who this year, given how difficult some things could be, how much pressure he might be under, how hard it may be to run the football, he is a tough kid. He is a physically sturdy kid. I think he's a decent leader. I don't think he's somebody who's going to get rattled or lose his confidence. He's got wideouts. And I think that's not a bad way to go through the season. It's not that other guys shouldn't get opportunities if they present themselves and you want to take a look at other guys. But I think there are a lot of reasons why Rocky Lombardi makes sense. And you can sense it in Mel Tucker's voice when he talks about the leadership and the things that grow. I mean, the numbers were decent. There was nothing that happened with Rocky Lombardi that would make you think that was the wrong decision. After the first week. And that may change as they face stiffer competition, and he'll have to do more, and he'll have to eventually hit on some deep balls. And if there's a better quarterback in practice, I'm sure we'll see him. But I also think for this particular team and this particular time, he's a pretty good quarterback. And we now have to remember he is a fourth-year guy who's essentially coming out of his freshman year eligibility-wise.
And this is his fourth start. I mean, it's rare that you have that many starts coming into a season like this. I mean, D'Antonio never really had a guy who had multiple game starting experience coming back after losing a starting quarterback. But, you know, and I think that you had to because of the season. I think in particular, you know, you had an off season in which, you know, those young guys did not get the kind of snaps and the work with the receivers that they normally would. You know, if there's an off-season competition, perhaps it's different. Perhaps Rocky Lombardi is even better than we saw on Saturday. Because I thought that he there were moments where he had, I mean, he had some good throws in that game, like really good throws. If you go back and watch, I mean, the third down or the fourth down throw to Matt Dotson, put it low and just where his, he can get it. The touchdown to Naylor, he threw the out to him away from the defensive back coming on. And the touchdown to Reed in the fourth quarter was about as good of a throw as you can get. And there was one that kind of, I think, bodes better for the future than people realize, is that at the end of the first half, he sent Naylor on a fly route down the left sideline and just missed him. I mean, but it was a beautiful ball, right? It had good velocity, good height on it, good distance. He allowed his receiver to run under it. That to me, when you've got guys with speed on the edge, you got to be able to put the ball up so they can get to it and get under it. Great play by Trey Avery to stop that, who I think Trey Avery had maybe the best, might have been the best player on that field on Saturday. But there were things that you saw with Rocky Lombardi that are building blocks, beyond building blocks. I mean, you saw him move the offense. I mean, they got to get more in the run game. I mean, you know, you shouldn't have to throw the ball 44 times, but then they still ran it 39 times. So, although, to be fair, one of those 39 was a intentional grounding call on Lombardi, so that was, you know, excuse it a little more to the pass, and you're coming from behind. But, yeah, I Rocky Lombardi wasn't the reason they lost, and he could be the reason that they're in some games if he keeps and continues to play the way that we saw on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously really hurt by – but the team-wide, the entire team, obviously, was really hurt by all those turnovers. And that's something we will talk about a little bit more, but we're going to take a break here first. When Michigan State turned the ball over for the seventh time against Rutgers, Spartan fans certainly needed to chill out. Seems like with everything that's going on in the world today, we all need a moment to chill out. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. Over the last few months, we've gone from no sports anywhere to sports on television everywhere. Coors Light is the official beer of watching any sport or any team. So whether you're watching the Spartans or the World Cornhole Championship, crack open the mountain cool refreshment of a Coors Light. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies, a perfect moment to unwind. For me, I reach for a Coors Light whenever I'm home and a game is on. And I actually did that when I was watching the Minnesota-Michigan game on Saturday night after we were all done with the Michigan State stuff. So make sure your refrigerator is stocked with Coors Light. When I need to unwind, Coors Light is the one I choose. Get Coors Light in the new look, delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right, well, let's go back and look at the Rutgers game a little bit here. I mean, obviously, I think
let's just talk about the live read skills of Phil Friend. I mean, these are
yeah.
The tones. I mean, you are a voiceover savant, man. Like the jobs that are going to come for you. A Coors Light is one lucky company, Phil Friend.
I did spend a couple. Yeah. I spent some time yesterday practicing that to make sure I didn't mess it up when I actually had to do this live recording.
I will say that there's one person who's really, really sad that we picked up a good Coors Light sponsorship like that, and that's Cody Tucker, our former Spartan Speak
yes.
mate.
By far the biggest fan of Coors that we know.
Easily he's in Wyoming right now crying in his Coors Light that he's not here to talk about Coors Light.
And he is, frankly, one of the reasons Coors is the empire that it is the amount of beer Coors that Cody Tucker is drank.
It's true.
If I'm not mistaken, he's a Coors original guy, right?
Yeah. No, there's no light beer in Cody. Look at that frame.
Well, let's move on to the aforementioned turnovers here. Obviously, I mean, I think we all think those seven turnovers are an aberration more than anything else. But, I mean, it's definitely something to keep an eye on going forward, especially with Jaden Reed's two fumbles. Now, I think the Jaden Reed's two fumbles were – I don't think that's a thing to worry about going forward, but it'll be interesting to – but I think people – like Jaden Reed even said this on – I can't remember if it was Saturday or earlier this week, but, I mean, that's something people are going – teams are going to attack it and watch and, you know, attack and see if that's how they can, you know, make him less of a, you know, less of a target or at least of a target for Michigan State anyway. So I guess what do you guys make of the turnovers in this game? Is it like, Chris, is this something you've talked about all times? Is it just simply due to the fact that they just haven't had enough practice time and then there was just a little bit of rust?
Well, I think that's a big thing of it. I mean, holding onto the ball, I mean, you listen to Tucker, during their camp. I mean, he's yelling at guys, ball security is job security, the ball, And, you know, one, if a coach is saying that, why is he saying it repeatedly? Sometimes there's the ball's getting on the turf in practice, right? You know, from the game standpoint, you know, the Reed fumbles, you know, I wonder how much of that is the time off that he's had. I mean, he had over a year and a half off since he last played a football game. And the last time he played a football game was at the MAC level. So, I mean, you know, yeah, they hit hard, but they don't hit as consistently. And give Greg Schiano's team credit because they were hawking the ball too. You know, you watch the defenders coming off the edge, and their hands were active and high and trying to knock it out of Lombardi's hands, and they did it once at the one, and then they did it another time when they were coming in, and that got ruled a forward pass, and, you know, so that would have been an eighth turnover. You add in the two turnovers on downs, that's almost 10 turnovers right there. I mean, that's, I think, you know, is it an aberration? Well, you hope so. But, you know, the things that you saw, the interception that Lombardi threw on that, the one where he and Reed was running the streak and he threw the out. I mean, that's stuff that usually is ironed out in spring practice that you didn't have. So, I mean, you got to clean it up in a hurry. There's no question because, you know, if ball security is an issue, you know, it doesn't matter if it's 7, 10, or 3, just at the wrong time and the wrong point in the field, that could cost you.
I think the Jaden Reed thing will be interesting to watch with the turnovers because he's obviously their dude and they've got to go to him a lot. And you know, I remember years ago when it was a little bit of a thing for LJ Scott. And, you know, it can become something that becomes a thing even if it wasn't a problem for you before. So you don't want to see it continue or it is sort of a thing. You know, and the miscommunications at receiver and quarterback, you'd like to think as those guys get on the same page, that stuff will get corrected. And I think there was probably some of it trying to do too much. Like if you're Jaden Reed, you've been waiting to play and you get out there and you're looking to make a play and he did make some plays and you're just not thinking in that regard like you probably need to going forward. But yeah, no, that if this team is nowhere near good enough to have turnovers be part of their identity, that needs to be
no question.
Correct.
I don't think there's any way it's going to be that high the rest of the year, but I guess we'll wait and see, especially with the Michigan defense that looked lively against Minnesota last week and caused all sorts of problems for Tanner Morgan. One thing I do want to mention about the Rutgers game is let's talk about the running back situation. I think I speak for a lot of people. I was very surprised that Connor Hayward was the guy who got the start. I mean, for many reasons, especially, you know, Elijah Collins coming off a great year. The fact that Hayward entered the transfer portal last year after four games and comes back and is the starter for the opening snap. Now, obviously, you know, when Mel Tucker comes in, that's a clean slate type situation. But and Tucker, I think, has even said that. But I still think it was a little shocking to see. And then we saw the emergence is a strong word because I think he only had like 44 yards or whatever. But there were a handful of runs over Jordan Simmons, you know, a true freshman running back, looked lively. And you could see there's a reason why he had offers from LSU and Georgia at one point in his high school recruitment. So, Graham, Hayward starting. Shocked? Surprised? Not surprised?
Surprised, but not shocked. I mean, I think we all thought Elijah Collins was the incumbent. You know, I'd heard whispers that the running backs did not look great in camp. And if that's the case, that probably Elijah Collins, because he's the guy who looked great last year. And he didn't. And so I don't think a lot of people were upset with it. But when Elijah Collins ran, he looked slow. He did not look like himself. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if, you know, the other thing you have to keep in mind about these guys, and I don't know if it's it, but at one point the season was canceled. And I'm going to tell you right now, if I was in college and you canceled my football season, I would have had a full-size deep dish pizza in my stomach within 12 seconds. So I don't know, you know, in terms of just complacency or, you know, how seriously you take a week, or do you just, you've been training in the off season. They tell you the season's not going to happen for a while. How, you know, maybe there was something there. I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, he was dinged up. He didn't look like the same guy. And I think we know who Connor Hayward is as a player. The problem with Connor Hayward, with relying on him, is he's never going to be somebody he's a good player, but he's never going to be somebody who gets you something out of nothing. And unfortunately for Michigan State right now, you need running backs and playmakers, especially, I mean, your offensive line just isn't going to create creases and holes you need people who can create on their own and take little creases and hit it hard and turn it and get to the edge. And Hayward's not going to be that guy for this team. And Jordan Simmons, when he opens his eyes, looks like that guy. I mean, he's a young guy who's got some room, but he ran hard and he looked like the best back. And I would expect to see a heavy dose of him again.
Yeah, and he looked quick to the edge. And right now, you need to. You can't run between the tackles. I mean, that was maybe some of the fallacy of the play calling that Jay Johnson had there, is trying to, you know, one of the things that Mel Tucker talked about and Jay Johnson talked about is not trying to force a square peg into a round hole, but they were trying to do that. And that's really what happened. You know, some of it's trying to establish your identity for moving forward, but, you know, you got to also try and win a game. And I think that's where you saw Simmons come in. He had the speed to the edge. You know, he talked about the patience of Jordan Simmons throughout camp. And, you know, we didn't necessarily see the patience. He was, you know, 100 miles an hour all the time when he got it. That sometimes cost him. But the Collins situation was really, to me, it was one of those things where we don't necessarily know some things that are going on, right? We know that there's been positive cases, right? I mean, that's safe to assume. They shut down workouts, right? We don't know who it was. And, you know, what's the effect of that, of not having that 14 days that they had to go into quarantine in terms of training and, you know, not really getting to get hit until late September, late, you know, those are all things that come into play with a running back. But certainly you're right. I think it's got to be a humbling and eye-opening experience for Elijah Collins. And let's talk about the other problem. When we talk about the turnovers, the running backs were terrible in pass protection. That's got to change. I mean, that first fumble was all on Connor Hayward. You know, that was a blindside blitz that he needed to pick up, and he didn't. And there was another blitz that Collins was supposed to pick up, that Lombardi, the fumble was overturned. So, yeah, there's a lot of digesting to be done with that running back room, because you can't average I think it ends up about 1.3 yards per carry after the Lombardi
intentional grounding.
You're talking 1.3 yards per carry. That's worse than the last couple of years. 50 yards against Rutgers. I mean, that's been the albatross around Michigan State's offense the last 2 years. You've got to be able to run the ball.
How much do you think that falls on the offensive line?
Oh, it's a ton. Don't get me wrong, Rutgers schemed it well in the way they used their nose tackle and forced the double team there and stuff they did off the edge. Shiano's a good coach, right? And they have better personnel than they've had in years past, I think, a little bit. But the offensive line is, this looks like a total miss at the end of the D'Antonio era for years in recruiting. And, you know, I think this is the biggest issue with the program is how long it takes to rebuild that, because they are not going to compete for anything meaningful until that group is different in terms of what it can get as a push and protection. And I don't know when that's going to happen or how much of it has to be overhauled. They certainly have to recruit better at the tackle position. I didn't think they played all that great inside this past week. You know, I don't think it's entirely on them, but now it's up to the coaches. You know what you have. And you may want to be something, but you got to help your team. It's sort of like when you watch Nick Foles play quarterback in the NFL. Talk about a brief Spartan quarterback for a minute. Nick Foles is at his best, even though Matt Nagy doesn't seem to understand it with the Bears, when he is in tempo, when it's like his world at his fingertips and they're moving. And I think you're going to need to spread it out tempo. You're going to need to do some other things to give these guys a chance, because they are what they are, and what they are is not competitive at a Big Ten level.
And I think some of it, you also have to kind of, you kind of have to take into account that they've had less than a month to really install everything, not just practice, to install what they got to do. I mean, this is stuff that would have been done in March. You know, the basics are still there. The coaches are trying to figure out how to dial back and go not just vanilla, but also simplify things so the players know what to do. And sometimes when you simplify things, that gives the defense a heck of an advantage. You know, there's a lot going on that that, you know, that needs to be corrected. But, you know, how do you correct them without having multiple practices? How do you correct them without having two-a-days? How do you, all these things that in the past coaches have had at their disposal this year aren't available. So, I mean, it sounds like excuses, but when football's a game of repetition and you don't get the repetition, sometimes this is what you see.
Graham, I think Mel Tucker's staff agrees with your offensive line recruiting assessment. I mean, we've talked about this before on previous Spartan Speaks, but the size of the offensive linemen they're recruiting now are already, you know, in the high 290s, low 300s. They're not taking, you know, 250, 260 guys and then going to build them up to 300 pounds. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch going forward.
There are different philosophies with it and different approach. Like, I mean, there is something, sometimes the best left tackles are kids who are tight ends that you sort of, you put on the weight, you see it in their shoulders and their thighs and their stand, you think, boy, that kid could be a, you know, he's an athlete. Let's make him a tackle. But yeah, I agree.
Is the guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's called Chewin theory.
And so, you know, the other thing is, this is why you give guys multiple years before you say this is their team and you judge them in football. I do not think, I mean, there are lots of things you'll be able to judge Mel Tucker on week to week, season to season, and year to year in recruiting and development of players and all sorts of stuff. But if you want to judge him on beating the top of the Big Ten East and competing for Big Ten championships like the Antonio did at his best, and you're thinking anything before year four, then, this is the problem with when D'Antonio left and how he left it. And it stinks. I mean, he left the program how he found it, right? I mean, that's ultimately, he had a great run. And he proved for a while it can be, there was some bad luck. If the 2016 class goes differently, then, you know, and it could have gone differently. It really could have. Then you had a certain different leaders that year, and you might have been able to up your recruiting. The whole system might have been different. If he leaves after 2017, after you have that bounce back year, and then you've got a young group with a new coach and you know, that the program might have sustained what he built. Instead, George Perlis'd it. He did what most coaches do. They don't really understand. They've lost something. They're not recruiting as well. And he hung on. And now this program is where it was when John L. Smith left it and D'Antonio got it. In a lot of ways, it's where a lot of coaches have taken over it. I mean, and what they don't have, frankly, is they don't have, and maybe they do it, receiver and you know, Antoine Simmons is a heck of a player, Naquan Jones. There's some guys on this team. But you think about, you know, the game 25 years ago when Saban's first year against Michigan. You know, he's got a second-round NFL draft pick quarterback. He's got Musa Muhammad and Derek Mason at receiver. He's got, he had Ike Reese. He had, you know, there were a lot of really good players on that team. And then, very quickly, the team that upset, like if you're thinking about upsets this week and upsets for this season, you know, the great upset that I always remember in MSU history is the 98 game against Ohio State and a 4-touchdown underdog and all that stuff. And that team had Cedric Irvin, Plaxico Burress, Robert Smith, Julian Peterson, had, you know, NFL corners, NFL, I mean, that team had dudes everywhere. And they had holes, too, and that's why they weren't even a bowl team that year. They won six games. But you need that. You need guys that, no matter who you're playing, are just going to be absolutely as good or better than the competition to pull upsets. And I don't think this roster right now, I think they'll be able to get some at receiver against just about everybody, but I don't think this roster right now can do that.
You know, it's funny you bring up that Ohio State game was year four of Saban. And he had time to recruit and bring in the guys that fit what he in his philosophy were. And then that's when he saw that ascent begin for the 2019 season. That 95 game against Michigan, though, is one that I'm kind of digging in on a little bit right now, because I think that's, you know, I mean, that the parallels, I mean, Michigan was coming off a huge win over Minnesota that week before, and Michigan State got absolutely waxed at Wisconsin the previous week, and I don't think many people were giving Michigan State much of a chance. I think it was about a 14 or 15 point spread at that point. A lot different than this one, but you're right, they had some guys that had experience. I mean, you had you had a quarterback in Banks that had started, and you had receivers. I mean, people forget Musa Muhammad was their number three receiver. I mean, he was barely used compared to Nigeia Carter and Derek Mason. And really, their one fourth down, one tip pass by Charles Woodson, an amazing catch by Derek Mason away from losing that game. But instead, because it's a rivalry game, because you have guys that have been experienced in it, you were able to have the mental resolve to pull out a rivalry game. This group doesn't necessarily have those guys who have been in this situation. Very few of these guys, particularly on the defensive side, have played in this game. And, you know, that's, you got to be able to understand what's happening when it comes to a rivalry, when it comes to how much more the intensity amps up, which is going to be interesting to kind of see how this group reacts to that. Because, you know, I do think there's more talent maybe than some people think, but it's not experience at all. I mean, you know, the thought last year of going with the defense and basically rolling the starters for about 85% of the snaps really didn't do the future much credit. I think it's less about, to me, it's less about the people that were brought in and more about the fact that they haven't had much experience. And, you know, you've got a base level that you're starting with in a shortened season compared to if a guy like Chase Klein or, you know, Shakur Brown or some of those other guys got a lot more experience last year, you know, including the offensive side with these receivers. I mean, that's going to be, to me, you know, how mentally, if they fall behind like they did in that Rutgers game, are they going to be able to survive in a rivalry setting?
Yeah, no, and one thing I remember, in the 20th, and it was the 25th, the 20th anniversary, I did something on that 95, and I remember the Michigan linemen saying they did not think there was any way that Michigan State could drive 88 yards on. And Michigan State right now, and that's going to be the thing, is can their playmakers this year, you know, go 90 or 88 yards on people when they don't expect it? Can those guys, can, you know, that passing game create enough that allows them to do what physically they can't do up front? And I think that's what we don't know. They've had the passing game in other years to do it. I think these receivers are really, really good. I think,
Well, who's your Scotty Green? That's the big question, because remember, on that 88-yard drive, they were able to go the run a little bit too. I mean, they were able to mix it up. I'm not necessarily sure you can with this group right now. You know, unless Collins all of a sudden becomes the player that we saw last year a little bit more. You know, unless Simmons takes that next jump. I mean, you know, you need to be able to have that run game to keep teams honest, because they're gonna, you know, a team like Michigan with the defensive backs that they have, you know, across the board. I mean, you don't just have Avery Young. You've got, you know, multiple safeties, multiple corners that can make plays, that can shut down your top options. Now what do you do? You know, if those guys are blanketed, you got to have something to go to.
So the thing that I'm kind of looking at is the defensive line. You know, Michigan's defensive line was, to use a Mel Tucker word, relentless all game versus Minnesota. And this is a Minnesota team that a lot of people like to potentially win the Big Ten West this year. And they just, they were getting to Tanner Morgan, it felt like every other play. And we saw Rutgers, you know, get to Michigan State and Rocky Lombardi quite a bit last Saturday. So I'll be curious to see what kind of adjustments Michigan State makes in their protections and stuff like that, and how they try to counter what the Wolverines are doing.
Yeah, especially late in that game. I thought they turned up the pressure in that fourth quarter on Morgan and just absolutely squelched out any chance that Minnesota would have had to come back through the air by getting in there. You know, that's, you know, but I think in some ways that's maybe a little different, that Tucker has a minor advantage, and advantage might not even be the right word. There's something there that you haven't really seen a lot of what this team is, but, you know, the question is what you saw on Saturday more of an aberration or more of the reality? And if that's the reality, then what you see on tape is what you see on tape, then, yeah, they will be able to tee up.
Graham?
Yeah, no, I think Michigan is going to be a challenge. Like, I mean, there were moments that Minnesota got some things going against that front seven, but This is going to be an interesting challenge. They're going to have to. I don't know how much better they are than Rutgers. I thought Rutgers' defensive line was pretty good. Again, we're going to find all this stuff out. One of the things that's really hard in week one is, you know, you don't 100% know what you're seeing because, you know, Minnesota can wind up being really good or not great, or Rutgers can be better than we think, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. They look more stout than I thought they would. But I do think this is a this is going to be one of those things where Mel Tucker and Jay Johnson, they've got to get creative, and they have to do everything they can. They have to understand what they have in that matchup in the trenches and work to win this week, not work to establish what you want to establish forever. That said, there's a certain point where you also have to, I've always remembered one of the reasons they beat Ohio State 22 years ago was that Cedric Urban carried the ball like 26 times for 52 yards. And it wasn't a lot, but it kept them honest. It allowed Bill Burke Plaxico Burress and those guys, Gary Scott, to do what they needed to do. And so you do have to keep some form of balance, but you also have to understand what you're capable of doing. And, you're probably not capable on short yardage situations. If you want to go for it and be aggressive, that is not going to come with a traditional run play.
All right, well, let's move on to our very last item here, predictions. I want to get from both of you who you think will win this game and if Michigan State will cover the 24.5-point spread that it is on DraftKings right now. Chris?
Boy, a lot of points there. I just find it hard to see Michigan State competing in this game. Not just winning, competing. The question is how much can energy do? To me, I think the spread's about where it should be. I think Michigan showed what they showed, and you got a guy like Milton who's slinging the ball around. You got a defense that's aggressive, and a lot of things that conspire against Michigan State. I haven't figured out a final score yet, but I'd say around that spread, Graham.
Yeah, I think it's an awful spread to take unless you really have, because it's tough after week one. There's always a week two overreaction. I would not, if you're thinking about taking Michigan State, I kind of think that's insane because this could get ugly.
Unless you're just taking them to cover,
That's what I mean.
Three touchdown loss is still covering in this one.
I'm saying even to cover because this could wind up being, 45-10 or something.
Yeah, it was 44-10 a year ago, right? And Michigan State seems like had a much better team last year.
And I'm sure they want to make
– and the Harbaugh factor, I think Jim Harbaugh will absolutely, if he's got a chance, step on Michigan State's neck. I think that's a reality of it. If you're up, you saw it last year, they're up 44. They win 44-10. If they could score more, they would.
Here's why I would caution, though, betting your mother's house on Michigan, is Michigan State might have enough in its receivers and its passing game to put up some points. And so if you've got to win by 25 and Michigan State's able to get to 17 or 20, you've got to score a lot of points if you're Michigan to beat a 25-point spread. I'm not saying they won't. I just think that there's a chance. Like, here's the other thing. That MSU offense last year was really struggling by the time they played Michigan. Like, I think that's a toss-up game if they had played it in September. And by then, Michigan State had that gauntlet against Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Penn State, which they lost their swagger. They lost a lot of games. They were in a bad place. And Michigan, which was struggling early, had found something. And so this year early, it looks like Michigan's a seasoned program and has a great quarterback and has found a lot already. But I do think this MSU offense has a little more explosiveness to it. And so, you talk about a backdoor cover. Michigan gets up 45-10. I'm also not surprised if the final score isn't 45-24 against this MSU team when you let your guard down a little in those settings. I just think if I had to pick one way or another, I would take the spread for Michigan, but I would not put a whole lot on it. So I'm going to say, and I haven't actually come up with my score 100% yet, but I'm going to say it's going to be something like 42-17, right around the actual spread.
All right. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at @Graham_Couch, @Chris Solari, @Phil_Friend, and @LSJ_Greenwhite. Thanks for listening.